Would you like for us to post information about your congregation on the Find a Church page of our website? We'll add your church when it becomes part of the Issues Etc. 300. We're looking for 300 congregations to donate $1,000 to Issues Etc. Please consider adding the worldwide outreach of Issues Etc. to your church's mission or advertising budget. Find out more about the Issues Etc. 300 at issuesetc.org. Click support and publicize your congregation to the world.
Well, we've come to the end of the first hour, and we like to end our first hours on Fridays by picking a few blog posts, Issues Etc., blog of the week. Now, if you have a blog and you'd like us to read it, go to our website, issuesetc.org, click support, go to the bottom of the page, you'll find the Issues Etc. widget, put it on your blog, and then let us know where your blog is so that we can find it too. Talk back at issuesetc.org. We'll start reading it and consider it every week for Issues Etc. blog of the week.
My pick this week is Drowning Myself Whenever I Can. It's a blog written by a guest on yesterday's Pastor's Roundtable, Pastor Charlie Lehman. It's a blog post titled, When Do You Cease Being Someone's Pastor? I realize that the question of when someone ceases to be someone's pastor may seem silly, but it's actually very important. Though a good discussion could take place about how this relates to people leaving one church for another or falling away from the faith, that's not the context in which I'm asking the question. I'm talking about death. Many would say that the moment a person dies, when the soul is separated from the body, is the moment that they no longer have a pastor. I disagree. I'm not saying that I keep the person on the congregational roster after they die. I'm not saying that I continue after the person dies to do what I did before they died, forgive their sins. They don't need forgiveness. They are perfect, holy, and blameless. Their soul is with Jesus awaiting the resurrection of their bodies. What I'm saying is that I still have certain duties to a member of my congregation after they die. I am to comfort those who love them with the word of the gospel. I am to pray, along with the deceased, for the welfare and eternal salvation of those who survive. Finally, I am to give Christian burial to the deceased. I am to proclaim what Jesus did for them in their earthly life. I am to proclaim what is still coming. I am to lay to rest the person's body, the body baptized into Christ's death and resurrection. I am the person's pastor until they are in the ground. That's when my duties to them cease, not before. Why do I post this? Because families often have no idea what the death of a parishioner does to their pastor. Often we have given pastoral care to the person for years. We love them. They are a beloved lamb whom Christ has entrusted to our care. We have responsibility to them to bury them according to the church's usual order. Sometimes, without having any awareness of what they are doing, a family will rob us of the ability to fulfill that responsibility. While it has never happened to me, it has happened to my colleagues. Once one of my professors died, and his pastor, who had cared for him spiritually during all the days of his illness, was not allowed to preach at his funeral. Another time, the family didn't even inform a parishioner's pastor that she had died and had a Methodist relative do the service against her express wishes. Recently, I learned that another friend is being robbed of the privilege of laying a member to rest because her Baptist grandson wants to do the service at the funeral home. These sorts of things hurt pastors very deeply. I'm not saying that our grief is more important than that of the rest of the family, but we are pastors. We are charged with the care of our parishioners from womb to tomb. Please, let us do our whole job. My pick for Issues Etc. blog of the week, Drowning Myself Whenever I Can.
Mine comes from a blog that I think we visited several times in Issues Etc. blog of the week. The blog is called Confessional Bites, and this is a post called Name Changes and Maximizing Effectiveness for Christ. That term effectiveness should be used cautiously, I believe. He's talking about the Southern Baptist Convention planning a name change, or at least looking into the possibility of a name change. And he writes in part, the problem I see with rebranding strategies waved at by the Southern Baptist Convention's president is that he's claiming a name change will, quote, maximize the Southern Baptist Convention's effectiveness in reaching North America for Jesus Christ. His claim is nothing more than sheer church growth gobbledygook. If people are attending a church because of a brand name, then the owners of that name need to urgently assess their teaching on the gospel. The church growth world contains many a guru who believes that it is their work that has the power to make disciples for Christ. Ever since the 1970s, followers of Donald McGovern and Peter C. Wagner have promoted a doctrine that reduces the working of the Holy Spirit through His Word in adding to the church daily to the role of a spiritual energy bar to be consumed by the missional enthusiasts who believe that they and their programs are the real power behind the growth of the church. He ends by saying, "The rationale offered by the Southern Baptist Convention president for a name change is a good example of men putting their faith in their own works when it comes to growing God's kingdom. Why not trust that the Holy Spirit will work through the proclamation of His Word and leave it at that?" Now, he does go on to say he doesn't care whether the Baptists change their name, but change your name for the right reason. Not because you think it's going to somehow make the gospel more effective. We cannot add to the work of God. We can only detract from it. And I don't think a name really makes much difference. It kind of comes back to where we began, doesn't it? People saying, "Well, we don't know what Lutherans believe." There is a reason for that. If you want to know what a Lutheran believes, you ask a Lutheran. Lutherans shouldn't be waiting to be asked what they believe. They should be confessing it boldly in the world, starting in their churches with their pastors, their pulpits, and out in the lives and vocation of all our people. The best way to brand Lutheranism is for Lutherans to actually be Lutheran. The worst way to do it, tell you the truth, is for Lutherans to imitate something else, is for Lutherans to be ashamed of what they are, or embarrassed by what they are, or bored with what they are, and to spend their time simply trying to imitate others. When we come back, hour two of Issues Etc., Bobby Ross Jr. will join us. We'll talk about media coverage of the Southern Baptist Convention name change. Pastor Matt Harrison of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod will talk with him about CFW Walther and Issues Etc., Soundbite of the Week.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Lutheran Public Radio, P.O. Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.